Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. My guest today is Heather Heinen, and I'm very excited to have you, Heather, because Heather and I have just recently got to know each other, actually. I was on her podcast, so she's coming on my podcast. And one of the interesting things about you and her, for you listeners, is she is very similar to me in a way, right? So she has this very in-depth mental health background. For 20 years, she's been, you know, basically in the mental health world, but she's also a life coach. She's also into fitness and training and has certifications in that. And yeah, she is very much like me in that she kind of spans this world of mindset and muscle and metabolism, just like I do. And that's why I'm excited to have you, because we can kind of talk about our different sort of approaches to things. So why don't you get us started, Heather, with how you got into this work and your approach, and then let's just have a really cool conversation for everyone around this practice of sort of mental health and metabolism and muscle.
Sounds great. First of all, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be on your show, so I appreciate the invite. So like you said, I've been in private practice as a licensed mental health therapist. It's actually been little over 20 years, maybe even closer to 25. That always ages me, though. So it's like, yeah, around 20 years. And I started out as a school counselor, actually, for a few years, and then moved directly into private practice. So, yep, I've got a long history kind of from a clinical standpoint and working with clients. Started working with adolescents, but quickly moved into working with mostly women. I do see some men, but mostly women in regards to anxiety. That kind of just became the niche that I went into. And as a practitioner, I'm sure you know this, we usually end up doing what maybe we deal with ourselves. And I definitely was someone who suffered with a lot of anxiety since I was a kid. I didn't know that's what was going on, figured that out later. But yeah, so kind of gravitated towards, or those clients gravitated towards me. And so did a lot with anxiety. And then I went through a divorce, and I had a child, and there were just a lot of life changes. And it was like, oh man, this job, I don't think I can do this job anymore. It was just very, very heavy. Obviously, financial reasons, did not want to give up the job, but needed a shift. So I shifted. I got into personal training. And so I would do, my stuff in the office. And then 2 days a week, I would do personal training. And it just gave a shift into this world of where there was a lot of immediate feedback. And I think I was missing seeing results right away in people. So that personal training piece kind of gave me that. And I had always been into health and fitness. I dealt with a binge eating disorder and heavy, heavy restriction for many, many years. And that's a whole other story. And we can get into that if you want. But that kind of led me into really getting into that health and fitness world. And then I would say maybe about 7 years ago, I was like, okay, I'm done with the personal training one-on-one, and went back into the clinic. I'm going to say full-time, but I actually don't work full-time. I work 3 days a week. And then I started this online sort of weight loss coaching, life coaching, sort of this other part of my business is what I would call it. Started the podcast, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't know if you, Brendan Burchard has an interesting model that he uses for experts that I really like, that he says, you know, there's three types of experts. There's the researcher, there's the results getter, and there's the role model, right? And so the researcher is someone who's got the education, all that kind of stuff. The role model is someone who's sort of gone through the stuff themselves. And the results getter is the one who helps people get through and gets results. And so whenever I'm listening to an expert speak, I'm listening for those things to see which one they are. And you happen to be all three of these, and we're similar.
In I was going to say, I think that's you too.
Yeah. It's really interesting, right? It's like, you don't always get that. Usually you get a researcher, but not a results getter, maybe not a role model. It's rare to have all three. And so that's really exciting to have you here. One of the major things that I want to talk to you about, Heather, is from my perspective, and I want to see what you think about this. I know that you're going to agree just based on your thing, but I want to see how you approach it. What we have in my mind, the hook would go something like this. You think it's habits and behaviors. It's really identity and beliefs, right? And people think that it's habits, behaviors. They think it's motivation. They think it's willpower. And certainly that stuff plays a role, but there's something that goes deeper than that in the identity and the beliefs and the stories we tell ourselves about the world. And at least this is my perspective. And I just want to hear your thoughts on this and what you think about this idea and how you address it, perhaps in your clientele.
Yeah, well, for sure, we are very, very similar in our beliefs around that and how to make, I mean, I am all about, you know, I always think about there's so much what out there. We can tell everybody, everyone knows what to do. I mean, there is so much information. So whatever our goal is, we know the what to do. It's all about, okay, but why would we want to do that? And then the how, like, how do we do it? And so to your point, there's a lot of info out there on, well, let's build these habits. Let's, you know, that's how we create behavior change and that sort of thing. And it's like, okay, yeah. And there's something much deeper that also needs to change. And that idea that how I kind of look at it as we have this belief, this deep-seated belief system that creates our identity, you know, how we think about who we are, all that kind of thing. And from that identity, we sort of, our thoughts populate from that, our thoughts about ourselves. Our thoughts create our feelings come along with little packages of sensations, little chemical cocktails. So we have a feeling, we have these sensations in our body. And that is how I believe that's what, how behavior is motivated. So you can think about it like, if you're having a feeling, if you're feeling motivated, well, yeah, you're going to behave in a specific way. If I'm feeling the motivation to go for a walk or a run, I'm probably going to go do it. But if I'm feeling defeated for whatever reason, I'm not going to engage in that behavior. That defeat creates a behavior of maybe sitting or maybe not wanting to leave the home or something along those lines. And then, you know, our actions create our behaviors create our results, and our results feed into the identity piece again. So I kind of think of it as this circular, what do you want to call it? Like system, you know, and how do we create behavior change? So I do think about it in a couple ways. We could call it state before story. That's how I like to term it. So state before story would be, what is our state of being? So if I'm in a highly nourished state, I'm in a relaxed state, then the story about me and my world and my identity is probably going to be positive in nature. It's going to be easier for me to make behavior change. But there is, and this is to your point, the other side of it, which is story before state. And story before state is when we on purpose populate thoughts about ourselves and our world, or we're conscious of the way we are filtering how we see our world, how we see ourselves. And so what we're telling ourselves, that story is going to create our state of being as well. Mm. And so we can kind of, if we have a really great narrative, a clear and concise story going on, we can really get into a state that helps us create that long-lasting behavior change, that sustainable behavior. So I do kind of see it from both sides, that you can kind of hit that cycle at two different places, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the research on the as-if principle and how that kind of confronts the law of attraction, which to me, the law of attraction essentially says, think a particular way, get a particular outcome.
Right, right.
And then the as-if principle says, act a particular way, and you'll automatically think a particular way. And I agree. Yeah. I think the research actually shows that both, it's in both directions. You can get there through both directions. Although I am one of these people that tends to think that it's much easier when you take an action to feel, think, and choose in alignment. And to me, that's the definition of being, right? Are we thinking, feeling, choosing, and acting in alignment? But it really is interesting that, you know, these things work together, the way you think and the way you act, and you can make change through either direction. But it sounds like you're saying something a little different as well, in that there's something beneath all of this that starts the process.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you and I would, well, we could talk. I was going to say we'd probably agree. I don't know if you'd agree, but, you know, I think I do really believe, and this is from years of working with so many people over and over, that really we do have those childhood experiences, those deep-seated sort of, if you want to call it, pre-programming when we are kiddos, that really lead to the thoughts and feelings about ourselves that create our identity into adulthood. And now there can be things that come up in adulthood that shift our identity and shift our thoughts about ourselves. But I think overall, there is this sort of programming that goes on, you know, when we are children, that sort of create, I call them like these core self beliefs about ourselves that then create our identity into the future. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me run this by you and see what you think about this. So I call these mud, right? Like these deep seated, let's call them deep seated seed stories that we plant in our unconscious. And they grow into affecting everything else. And I call them mud because it's an acronym for misguided unconscious decisions. So they're misguided because we make these decisions about ourselves and the world at times when we don't have the wisdom, we don't have the know-how, we don't have the maturity, we don't have the resources to understand what has happened. And it doesn't have to be a capital T trauma. It can just be a struggle or a striving that happened during our developmental years, child, adolescent, young adult. And then you get stuck in the mud. So in a sense, these really are, in my mind, decisions that we made about the world and ourselves. They're just unconscious and we don't know they're there. It's like Carl Jung has a beautiful saying on this. He says that if you don't make the unconscious conscious, it will follow you around and you will call it fate. And I think this is what you're speaking to.
Oh, for sure. Yes, exactly. And that's a beautiful way to put it. And yeah, I was saying you have the best acronyms. You have so many of them. It's great.
That's the problem with acronyms, Heather, and the acronyms and frameworks. You forget them. You know, you're like, what does that one stand for?
Well, you did a good job there. Did a good job remembering. Yeah. And, you know, I think this is the piece that gets missed in our space, and really what I'm kind of shouting from the rooftops, and you are as well, where it's like we are missing this deeper part of the human experience within behavior change and hitting goals and creating a new lifestyle. All those things are great, but it's like we are really missing that piece of it, and I do think it's so important. I mean, Jade, there's an education piece in this too, right? Mm-hmm. Like just educating people on what happens when, I mean, you and I are in this space, so it seems really normal. Like, yes, of course, our childhood experiences developmentally, that affects us and that creates who we are, you know, and our belief system about the world that may or may not be correct. But you know, not everybody is into psychology and counseling and, you know, so there's this education piece too of letting people just know that there is this deeper, this yeah, I call it deeper, this deeper place that change needs to come from, needs to be explored, needs to the subconscious or the unconscious, as Jung would say, brought into the light so that, you know, we need to make those things clear and have clarity around them so that we can start to acknowledge, is this the story and the narrative that I want to continue on with? Or do I need to shift and change this story and narrative in order to live the meaningful and purposeful life that I want to be living?
Man, Heather, I love that. And it does bring up, I agree completely with that, but it does bring up something that, and I don't hope you don't mind getting into mm-hmm. this. And I hope you listeners
go for it.
Don't mind getting into this too, because this is going to be something that can be triggering. And so let me set it up, for you, Heather, and for the listeners. And so, you know, if we're listening to what Heather just told us, you know, she's telling us in, to some degree that there's a choice here. Now, of course, if it's unconscious, we're not always aware of this choice, but there is a choice of the way you see the world. I oftentimes think if you want to feel different and think different, you first have to see the world different. And that is what we're going to talk about now. And this is this idea of victim. And so I know that the term victim can be very triggering for a lot of people. So let me just say, to me, from my perspective as a next level human, if someone is hurt, they not only should be a victim, they have to be a victim for a time, because that is a required first step of healing. We must be a victim. We must feel, and we must allow ourselves to be in a victim state. However, and this is the triggering part, at some point, and I want to see your perspective on this, Heather, at some point, we must make a choice. And I know that is an infuriating thing to hear for a lot of people who have been victimized or hurt. But at some point, we must choose to leave the victim state. And if we don't do that, then it's self-imposed suffering in my mind. So I said that as a statement, but I really made it as a question for you, because when we hear choice in this, a lot of people don't think they have a choice and they are stuck in this sort of victim place. And I'm wondering what you think about this, because you brought up childhood, you know, development and what I'm thinking about trials, tribulations, and even capital T traumas that people went through that have caused their psyche to be stuck. And we have the research to say this is what happens.
Absolutely.
At what point do we choose differently, and how do we choose differently? Maybe this is something you and I can unpack together.
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right, time to talk about one of our sponsors. This one is one of my favorites. It's a long-time sponsor. You all know it. And if you don't, you are in for a treat. AG1. Now, for those of you who do not know AG1, I am very excited to introduce you to AG1, because it is one of the products that I've been taking for some time, and I take this almost every single day. It acts as my multivitamin. It acts as my probiotic. It acts as my green drink. It does a lot of different things. It's an antioxidant, and it has adaptogen herbs in it. This is something I use straight up, a scoop in water. It's also something, surprisingly, that I put into my protein shakes. It does turn those protein shakes green, but the flavor is so neutral that I don't even notice it, and it is a great way to get all these nutrients in. The things I love about AG1 is all the things I just mentioned, but the fact that when you think about it, look at all the different products it replaces. Prior to AG1, I was taking a bunch of stuff, and it has replaced 3 to 5 different products for me. And so I really love this product. It is what most people would consider a greens drink if you just looked at it, but it is so much more than that. Now, I've taken greens drinks in the past. Number one, they tend to taste like swamp water. I love AG1 because it's a very neutral, pleasant flavor. And the other thing is that many of these used to raise my blood sugar because they put other things in it, extra starches, tapioca starch in particular, and AG1 does not do that. The other thing about AG1 is it does testing constantly on keeping its product clean, and it is on its 50-plus iterations, so they keep making this product better and better. But look, don't take my word for it. Really, you should try the product. To get AG1, all you have to do is go to drinkag1.com drinkag1.com/next level. Drinkag1.com/next level. And they have a couple deals for you specific to that link. This is one of my favorite products. I urge you to get on AG1. It's going to be one of those things that you do for a very long time and be extremely beneficial for your health. Check the product out, drinkag1.com/next level, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, first of all, I do agree with you, and I appreciate your softness around, you know, talking about how that can be triggering. You know, I think as practitioners, we're always working to be understanding and empathetic and to be with our clients who are in that space. I guess in a way that's part of the work, you know, as a therapist, is if you're sitting with someone in that space, you know, you're sitting with them, but you're also looking for opportunities to move them to work alongside them, to move into a space of where they can start to come out of that victim role, if you will. And I think to offer people the idea that it is more of an empowering place to be when you move out of that space. One other thing I want to touch back on what you said, what I loved was you did make mention of how important it is. You do have to be in that victim place for a bit. You do have to feel those feelings. That is reality. That is truth. And then eventually to be able to move into a different story about it. Sometimes too, I don't know what you think about this, not to go off on a tangent, but I think a lot of times people misunderstand when we're talking about changing the story or the narrative to a perspective that works better in life. You know, it's sort of like, it's not like you pretend the trauma didn't happen. It's not like we're making up lies about it. When we talk about changing the story, it's using the reality of what happened, but we're transmuting or transforming the energy of that into this new way of moving into the world, of seeing the world, of having that perspective within the world. In order to, what do we want to say, move forward or live a more meaningful, purposeful, free life. I think when we're stuck, when we're in victim mode, that's fine. But if we get stuck there, we are so confined. We are so imprisoned. And I just want to empower people to break free of that, you know?
Yeah.
I think I missed questions in there. Sorry.
No, I really loved what, you know, what you're saying there, because I think it is absolutely critical. And it reminds me of this, you know, we humans are meaning making machines, you know, in a sense that might be our superpower or one of our superpowers. Like in the next level human curriculum, the first power to master is perception, which is really our ability to make meaning out of things.
Right.
And so, if we're in victim state, which we must be for a time, and we want to, we have to eventually get out of it. Otherwise, we're trapped forever.
We
have to make a different meaning, which is what you're saying, and it's critical. Yeah. And to me, it's about seeing the frustrations as initiations, the hurts as opportunities, which is what, you know, and that is a perception shift, right? And I'll give an example of this. You and I, we talked about this before. We're the same age, so you'll get this, and hopefully the listeners will as well. But when I was a kid, and probably when Heather was too, we'd be sitting there having our breakfast cereal and we would have our milk cartons in front of us. Mm-hmm. And on those milk cartons were pictures of missing children.
Now,
if you go back and look at what happened, this was someone who lost their child. That child was murdered, raped after coming home from school. One of the worst things that could possibly happen. Mm-hmm. And what they did to transcend the victim state, which I think you said beautifully, Heather, it's not to change the reality of what happened. It's to use it to do good. And what they did was they went and said, we're not going to allow this to happen to any other children. We're going to do everything we can to use our hurt as a way to help. And that's how they transcended this. And I think we all have this opportunity. It's kind of something you mentioned last time we talked, and we were talking about this idea of the authentic telling of your story of struggle is the way to turn pain into purpose. And that's the first step. That's what they did there. So I love what you're saying there, because I do think this is how we begin to move past this. I don't know if you remember those those milk cartons and children. And do they still do that? I don't know.
I haven't seen any of that. No. That was back in our day for sure. But a great example of how pain can be transmuted or transformed into something. And, you know, I have, you know, personal story on that too. I think about, you know, I kind of mentioned in the introduction, you know, I had disordered eating pattern forever, tons of heavy restriction, like really, really, and that for anybody who's gone through that, you really feel like you're in prison. Like it was a good 8 to 10 years of feeling very much imprisoned. And some of the most miserable times in my life. I mean, truly depressed, and then swing into high anxiety. Like it was just this very, not a great time. Mm-hmm. And being able, I believe I was able to take that after my own healing. And I'm really able to use that now to help other people, which has become one of the most amazing parts of my life, like being able to be in this space and help people move through those same struggles that I was in. But I think I can only do that in the way I do it because I experienced it myself, right? So at this point, I mean, when I was in it, I would have done anything to get out of it. And at this point, I'm like, oh, I would not give up those years for anything. So it's a way of transmuting that, of transforming that horrible time in my life into something meaningful. And I would even say moments of joy, you know?
Yeah, I love this. Let's me and you unpack this for the listener, both of ourselves, because to me, I go, we tend to think, right, if someone's listening to this right now, and I think this is a good thing, but right now in mine, in your world and out in the health space where there's a lot about trauma. Capital T trauma, right? Rape, physical assaults, all of that kind of stuff. And you know, people like Gabor Mate and others are doing amazing work to illuminate this for all of us. You know, The Body Keeps the Score, Bessel van der Kolk. You know, so there's so much going on in this particular space. What I'm curious about is people don't always respond to the idea of trauma. And so I'm wondering in your world, and then I'll go through mine, but I'm wondering, do you see that some of these things that you had to struggle with, did they come out of trauma or did they just come out of struggle? Did they just come out of difficulties? You know, I'm curious, and then I'm curious of how you spotted the stories and the patterns around these things and transcended them.
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right. Time to break into the show for one of our sponsors. This is a brand new sponsor, and there is a lot of neat research around this product that you're going to want to listen to and pay attention to. The product is Qualia Senolytic. This product helps to address one of the key discoveries of the last decade in regard to aging. As our cells age, many of them begin to become arrested in their development. These cells stop dividing. They become senescent cells, kind of like zombie cells, right? These cells that are just hanging around, no longer dividing and secreting negative compounds that have negative effects on the body. This is a product, Qualia Senolytics, that addresses this effect. Now, you might think, what about exercise and diet and fasting and cold plunges and all these things? Aren't these things going to help with this? Well, here's the interesting thing. We all age, right? No matter what you do, we all know that we're going to age and you're going to see the signs of aging. Research is suggesting this is because of these senescent cells and all these things I just mentioned, fasting, proper diet, exercise, all these things seem not to make much of a difference when it comes to these senescent cells. So how do we get rid of these zombie cells and help that middle age feeling that a lot of us get after we turn 40? I know I did. That's what this product, Qualia Senolytics, does. It's like pruning the yellowing leaves off of a dead plant. It removes worn out senescent cells to allow for the rest of the body to begin to thrive. And all you need to do is use this compound 2 days a month, 6 capsules one day, 6 capsules the next day, and you will get the effects of these senolytic agents to remove these zombie cells from the body. The formula is non-GMO, it's vegan, gluten-free, and the ingredients are meant to complement one another, factoring into the combined effect of all these ingredients together. Not only that, this product comes with a 100-day money-back guarantee. If you don't begin to feel higher energy levels, feeling younger, more productive, and more enthusiastic, and especially what happened to me, less aches and pains. How do you get this product so you can take advantage of getting rid of these senescent cells? All you have to do is go to neurohacker.com/human. And when you do, you'll get up to $100 off. When you use the code human at checkout, you'll get an additional 15% off. That's neurohacker.com/human and use the code human on checkout. Look, aging is one of those things that is incredibly difficult to do, even when we're doing all the right things with diet and exercise and fasting and all the tools we know. This is one of those products that is insurance on helping us age better. Check out Qualia Senolytics, neurohacker.com/human, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah. Okay, so do I feel it came from trauma? You know, I could just speak to this when I think about traumatic, that word, and some of this is semantics in a way. So, but if I think of the word traumatic and personally in my life, I can think of my parents divorced when I was 13. I believe that was a traumatic event in my life. I mean, I would use that word, you know. My divorce was pretty traumatic. I would use that word for that. Other things I would say were probably struggles, adverse life events. And I don't know, Jade, it's like, do we have to define those things? That's why I'm saying it. It's some of this is so much semantics. And when I'm working with clients, I let them language it. I don't say to them that was trauma or that, you know, I'm very careful about letting each individual, just like you let me language it and put my own take on it. Cause that's my reality, my authentic where I'm at. I don't want anyone telling me any different, you know? Yeah. And so maybe that's part of it too. Like, how do we, I don't know if that's what you're asking, but how do we decide if it's okay? Yeah. If it's trauma, is it big T trauma? Is it little? And we use these big T trauma, little T trauma, cause we're trying to get this, these semantics, right. Yeah. You know? Which is fine. That's fine. We need language to try to define some of these things, but language can be tricky too. I mean, that's a whole other thing, but that can, our language really, how we choose our words can create our own stories as well, you know? So I would say those were two, what I would label traumatic events in my life. The rest of it being like even the disordered eating and things like that. Me personally, I would say that was a big struggle. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as traumatic. I don't know yet.
Maybe there was something traumatic or struggle behind it that caused the stories that led to that behavior.
For sure. That I would just, whatever. I trust me, I've done all this work. That definitely was my parents' divorce. Yes. I know how that all worked. What was the second part of your question?
Yeah, it was just more about, you know, so the languaging is important. And the reason I brought it up is just because I think people go, well, I don't have trauma, so I don't have to worry about this discussion between Jade and Heather. Right. And so if we're listening to what Heather's saying, it's like it really is individual. But some of us, you know, even don't define, like I might define something traumatic. Heather may not. Exactly. You all may or may not. What matters is how the reaction was in ourselves. So that was first question. So I'm so glad you unpacked that for us. Then the other thing is then how did you begin to, or was it a avenue of spotting some of these struggles, traumas, whatever you called it for yourself, spotting the patterns? And it sounds like you were with your parents' divorce, and then being able to unpack some of that around issues around safety and security, acceptance and belonging, freedom and autonomy that then led to some of the dysfunctional symptomatic behavior. I think people go, oh, there's, you know, an eating disorder here. That's the thing. But what I'm suggesting is there's something beneath that for which eating disorder is a symptom. And I'm wondering if you don't mind unpacking that for us so people can actually see the way it works from someone who's an expert.
You bet. Absolutely. Yeah, you are spot on. So yes, the disordered eating or eating disorder, that is always going to be a symptom of something else. And so if we go back to my parents' divorce, what my experience of that, and also people should understand when certain things happen to us, the ages that we are at is going to matter in how that psychological block or that trauma hits us. So I was 13 years old. So when that happened, so I was this sort of preteen teenager when all that went on. So, you know, during that developmental stage, I am forming my identity. I'm looking about relationship is going to be big there, you know? So I'm watching my parents divorce, which means I'm forming ideas then about men, about safety and security within relationships and all that sort of thing. So that got into, for me, feeling this sense of I'm not good enough. I'm not. And so that's a core negative belief that I really had hit deep. I'm not good enough, which then led into, okay, if I'm not good enough, I need to be good enough somewhere. So I got into sports and rock climbing and all these things that then had to do with my body and weight, right? Because like rock climbing in particular is a very strength to weight ratio. So then I wanted to get better at rock. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to be enough. It's like you desire all these things. And so that was the avenue I took. Some people do it in other ways. Like I have to be the best at my profession, or I have to get straight A's or whatever. It all comes down to I need to be perfect. I'm not enough, so I need to be perfect. So then I'm holding on to this subconscious thing of I have to be perfect or I'm not safe and secure. I don't feel safety in my body unless I'm perfect, unless I'm performing in this really amazing way. So that led to this over-exercising, over-training, because I wanted to be the best at my sport. And I was running at the time and mountain biking too, and I wanted to be amazing at all these things. And so that led into over-training, over-exercising. That led into binging because I was starving my body. And you just that's a whole other thing. But with binging, you eventually get to a place where your body just kind of almost takes over. So I would start binging, and then you binge. And then, oh my goodness, now I got to restrict and run 20 miles tomorrow. And so basically just really wrecking my body. But yes, to your point, it starts with that one, and it can be multiple things too, but that messaging of you're not enough, you're not enough.
Yeah. And I love what you're educating us on here. The way I usually say it, just for you listeners, and Heather, you can correct me on this if you think I get this wrong. But to me, I go between 0 and 10 years old, right? Children, that's primarily safety and security years.
Right.
And then you start going, and of course, you're always looking at safety and security throughout your
forever
development.
And always.
But then, you know, then 10 to 20 is really about acceptance and belonging. You're right at this cusp as you move from safety, security to acceptance and belonging. And those are the stories that you then began to look at. So the symptom of the binge eating and the overstriving physically has its roots in stories around safety and security and acceptance and belonging. And so then if we want to stop this, we have to go back and look at these misguided unconscious decisions that we made about the world during these childhood development phases. And of course, we might go, you know, this is the important thing I think all of us need to kind of worry about. Some of you went through divorces and it wasn't traumatic.
That's
Heather
right.
went through a parent divorce. It was traumatic. It imprinted on her in a particular way that caused patterns that followed her around into adulthood that she had to become aware of and clear to begin to heal completely. And one thing I'll say here that I think is really interesting is that some of these things that we do, by the way, right, you know, in the landmark form education, which I did way back, you know, some of you may know that, but they talk about rackets. And the racket is this idea. It's a strong suit and it has some benefits, but it also has a downside. It's what we do. So in a sense, Heather's racket was over-exercise, strive, and it has some benefits, right? Like it did have some benefits in terms of probably got a lot done, a striving personality, probably really good in a lot of ways, but then it had a downside too.
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right. Well, I have a new partnership to announce that I am very excited about. And this partnership is with the Next Level Human company, ButcherBox. I consider them a Next Level Human company because they are doing everything they can to source the best quality meats, as well as source those meats from companies and farmers that are committed to sustainable and regenerative animal husbandry, raising animals in the way that they are naturally supposed to be raised and doing right by the environment. And it is just what it sounds like, a butcher box. Imagine you had a butcher right down the street from you that put a box together for you of all the best quality meats that you could find. And that is what Butcher Box does. They send them frozen right to your door. And the animals are the highest quality, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, never given antibiotics or hormones, humanely raised. Grass-fed beef is an incredible source of omega-3 acids, vitamins, and minerals. It is one of the healthiest foods on the planet. Not only is the beef superior, but they also raise crate-free pork that are humanely raised. Also, never with antibiotics or hormones in any of their meats. They also really pay special attention to their chicken. These are pasture-raised chicken, heirloom breeds. This means ancient breeds, wild breeds. They never give them antibiotics or hormones, and these are free-ranging animals that can run out in the pasture and eat all of the worms and bugs and everything else to make their meat incredibly healthy. And they also do free-range turkey and wild-caught seafood. And this seafood is wild-caught, sustainably harvested, no artificial coloring, no additives, just straight from the sea. Your health is going to get better, and it is much better for the environment. If you want to get involved, there are two ways to do this. One, you can go to drj.com/butcherbox, and you can choose between three curated boxes, or you can do what I do, which is make your own box. That's drj.com/butcherbox. And when you sign up using that link, you can choose between a free year of salmon, a free year of ground beef, or a free year of chicken breast. I love ButcherBox. I use them myself. I am so excited that they are now sponsoring the podcast. drjade.com/butcherbox. And let's get back to the show.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think too, you know, when you're talking about when we have to go back and look at those stories and get clear and find clarity in order to start to shift them, to transmute them, to transform them into where we want to go. Just as you were talking, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because usually, so I was really unconscious in a way. I was still doing my job and helping people, and people were dealing with things I was dealing with, and I wasn't even seeing it in myself, right? Which I always think is awesome, because it's like people think experts in the mental health field or whatever, they've got it all together. And it's like, okay, no. But it was like, yeah, you know, I got pregnant. And that, that is what made me look at myself, because now I was carrying this other human being. And all of a sudden, it was like I wasn't enough, but I sure as heck was going to take care of this other little person growing inside me. And that is what made me look at, whoa, what are you doing? Like you can't restrict when you're having a baby. You can't run 20 miles when you're preggers, you know? Yeah. So my point in that is just that I think sometimes it does take something else sort of hitting us over the head, if you will, to take a peek at what's going on. Although I think the easier way is to get educated on some of this stuff so that you don't need something hitting. And I loved being pregnant, don't get me wrong, but like something that major happening and wasting all that time and years. Like if I had known, if I could have plugged in, if someone had been talking to me about some of this stuff, I maybe would have made some of those changes earlier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really interesting because I oftentimes think that life, you know, it's like, it's almost like we're playing the game of human. And in this the goal is to up level. And of course, our repeated patterns, recurrent obstacles and stuck emotions tell us an awful lot about how we're progressing in the game. And then we have these things happen to us that, you know, people have this saying, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, part of me likes that saying, part of me doesn't. Because I also go, well, I think a lot of times too, things happen and we have to make a reason. We have to choose a reason.
That is my belief.
You know what I mean? So, so to me, I go, I'm not sure it's things happen for a reason. I think it's things happen and we make a reason. In other words, opportunities in everything, even if they are horrible, as we saw with the milk carton example, and we humans to become a victor instead of a villain, right? Or a victim. Villain is the one that's a hurt person who's hurting people. A victim is one who's a hurt person who's over-identifying with that hurt. And a victor is a hurt person who helps people. And as we make that transition into victor, we begin to transmute, transcend, integrate our wounds in a way that takes us to whole other levels. And the things that happen to us, no matter how difficult they seem, there's always that opportunity to go from villain or victim into victor in my mind. And a lot of people don't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, that gets into the, I mean, that's part of the reason I love having these discussions and hitting, you know, more and more people, and really that I use the word education, but that education piece on that. Yeah, these things absolutely can be looked at. They can be clarified. You can find clarity with your story, and you can really, there are the hows, there are skills to be able to change some of that, you know?
Yeah. And so, sorry, I lost it just for a minute there, Heather. But
that's
so one of the things I want to do, if you don't mind, Heather, you can kind of coach me along with this too. But I do want to share a little bit of my story with my story of struggle, trauma, also to illustrate for the listener how, you know, the different ways these can look. So we saw Heather's sort of story of struggle, and my story is, you know, very different. My parents, you know, are still together. They had a really great marriage. There was some arguing and stuff like that. And I was loved, you know, and I was very much cuddled a lot and never really coddled. But I did have a mother who was dealing with her own childhood traumas. And she was incredibly volatile emotionally. I would find her you know, crying in the bedroom at times, and, you know, find her weeping in the living room. One minute she would be, you know, happy with me running through the house with mud all over me. And the next minute I would be being screamed at because there were some socks on the floor. And this made me distrust. Of course, I figured this out way later after an affair and a divorce, but it made me mistrust female emotions. I became a people pleaser for women. And I also did not trust female emotions or that a woman could actually hold it down for me. And this followed me into all of my romantic relationships. And so the point that I think we're making here is that look at Heather's, right? Her not dealing with those underlying things led to binge eating, striving in a particular way. With me, it led to romantic dysfunction. And it didn't have to be some, you know, huge, you know, event. I was never raped. I was never physically abused. You know, I didn't have those kind of things. I just had a mother who was a loving mother, but incredibly emotionally volatile. And as simple as that is for some of you listening, you might, it might not have hit you the way it hit me, but it did hit me that way for whatever reason. And that then created dysfunctions. And so if we look at our dysfunctions, and you made an interesting point, Heather, about us humans, we often can see everyone else's dysfunction and are blind to ourselves. It's almost like we have bad breath and you just don't know it. People with bad breath really don't know. They know only because people won't give them gum. They haven't been kissed in forever and people are keeping their distance. Then they know. Well, so we have to look at our patterns.
Yeah. And I have a little saying for that I always share. And that's, you know, when you're in the jar, you can't read the label. You have to get out of the jar to be able to read the label.
That's
everybody else can see the label.
Yeah. Everyone else can see the label. And that's the work that I think, you know, that's the work that we must do that a lot of people don't want to do and they don't see it. Again, let's just go back to what we were talking about. You're talking to two professionals. You're listening to two professionals talk about the idea that there's stories behind this, that the habits and behaviors, the way you exercise. And of course, Heather and I have done this. We've coached on all this, but exercise, diet, all the things, the biohacking, all of that. It's time to biohack our psychology as well as our physiology. And if you can do that, a lot of things begin to figure themselves out.
Absolutely. I love that. When you work with clients, like you're, so now I'm thinking about, we've kind of talked about the why, and I'm thinking about, okay, the how is also a really important piece, I think, for people to understand. I kind of mentioned it earlier. I really like people to hear that, there are, these are things like skills, and skills can be learned and practiced and mastered. And so this is not, I like people to understand this can be really practical. This doesn't have to be necessarily that you go work with a therapist and, you know, you do all this psychoanalyzing stuff. It doesn't have to be that way. I'm not sure, you know, I was going to ask you how you work with the clients and that how part. I know for me, you know, it's a lot of things. I mean, I do a lot of like writing exercises with clients and journal prompting. And I mean, obviously in clinic, it's a lot, you're doing that verbally or whatever, but talking a lot about even worksheets on, you know, sit for 5 minutes and what are the thoughts coming up and what those thoughts, what feelings then come up, and teaching people feeling words and the thousands of feeling words that there are so they can get nuanced with naming their emotions, things like that, that are practical and that can help you uncover or figure out what these actual narratives and subconscious, unconscious stories are that may be not helpful for you anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's not surprising to me as you and I get to know each other better. And I'm so grateful that we're developing this dialogue and this friendship and this, you know, sort of because we see each other things a lot the same way. And we have enough differences to make it interesting to learn from each other. But 100%. And actually, I use a form of my own form of written exposure therapy, which is a journaling technique that essentially brings people through. This is a technique that developed for PTSD, but I use it for all struggles and strivings and trials and tribulations as a way to feel, deal, and heal around old stories. And so I use a ton of journaling. And in fact, I think it perhaps is, I say this tentatively but confidently, that it is perhaps the most important of the things that I use to help people rewrite their stories. There's something about, and by the way, research even shows there's something about putting pen to paper pencil to paper that's different than typing, although that works too. But I actually have people physically write. Yeah.
That's what I do too, Jade. Yeah. And I'll sometimes even try to show them some of that research, like your handwriting, Matt, like you writing in your hand matters. To your point, you can type and that's fine too, but there is a different part of the brain that's activated when I believe it's within the limbic system, which is our emotional part of the brain, when we're using penmanship, which I could go on a tangent about that because they don't teach handwriting in school anymore. Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
You know, funnily enough, my mom's like a professional calligrapher. So she's like she's always railing about that. But written exposure therapy or journaling techniques. I do honor code work. I do a lot with journaling. The next how is I do a lot with meditation, not the mindfulness meditation that most people are familiar with, but more feeling based, visualization based, dropping people into the feeling so they can learn, their nervous system can learn a different feeling than what they are experiencing day to day. So I'm wondering about that. And then the final one I'll throw out is I do a lot with a form of exposure therapy that I call fear PR based stuff. And actually, there's an interesting research study that came out recently where they took arachnophobes and then also people who were afraid of heights. Acrophobia, I think they're similar in name, but arachnophobia is fear of spiders. Acrophobia is a fear of heights. And they basically said, let's dissolve through exposure therapy fear of spiders. And what they found is the acrophobia, the fear of heights, also dissipated. So there's something about when we extinguish one fear, we actually start to become less fearful overall. And so I use a lot of exposure therapies with fear-based, what I would call PRs, personal records from our world of personal training, right? It's like, what's your PR? What's your personal record on a lift? What I do is what's your personal record on a fear? And so that really is, there's other tools, but my how are those three things, written exposure therapy, feeling-based meditations, and then exposure therapy so that you're, you know, it's that whole idea of being that you brought up, Heather, right? Thinking, feeling, choosing, acting.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to hit all three of those with that three-step process. I'm curious how your process looks.
Yeah, really, really similar, of course. you know, the piece I do a lot of so obviously I do a lot of cognitive behavioral. That's kind of where the journaling piece fits in a little bit. But I also use a lot of tactics from somatic therapy, which would be the feeling-based part where I'm working not just with cognitions and behavior, but where we're working with the sensations in the body and more feelings in the body. I find, you know, I did share at the beginning, I have a lot of anxiety clients. Typically, people with high anxiety are also pretty high functioning. So pretty high functioning anxiety clients. And they typically have a lot, they're overthinkers. They have a lot of ruminating thoughts, you know, all these kinds of things. So if you're in your head a lot, typically that person, this was me forever, very difficult time feeling our feelings, feeling our feelings. And so, you know, if your listeners kind of think about this, I have this theory that as humans, one of our biggest fears are actually feeling our feelings, if you think about it. So we talk about being afraid of spiders or being afraid of heights or, you know, whatever the fear may be. But the truth is, it's not actually, this is my theory, so I may be wrong and you can intervene here, but it's not actually the spider. It's sort of like, I don't want to feel the sensations in my body that come up when I see that spider. So it's not the little thing. It's not the heights. It's like the sensations I'm going to have. It's the body, the nervous system goes into this place of thinking it's going to die, right? So it gets real panicky. And the feelings like the tight chest, I can't breathe. You know, those sort of things in heightened anxiety are actually what we're afraid of. So I do a lot of work getting people to sit in their feelings. And I do things with timers and it is just exposure therapy, but it's exposure to the feeling and the sensations themselves. If I can get someone who is on the verge of a panic attack or even afraid of having another panic attack, and if anyone out there has ever had them, I've had them, they're horrible. You do think you're going to die. A lot of people go to the ER thinking they're having heart attacks. They can't breathe. It's super, super scary. But you can teach people to sit in that. And over time, the nervous system, the brain learns, okay, we're not dying here. We're not dying. And so eventually that whole sensation package that goes along with the feeling of anxiety comes down a notch. It's not like it always disappears. I mean, for some people it does, but it comes down enough to where we don't have this immediate visceral reaction anymore. So now I'm not afraid of having a panic attack. I'm not afraid. So it's a different way of approaching sort of this exposure therapy in regards to actually learning and teaching the nervous system to feel our feelings.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I use a lot of the same things. And so we're in agreement here as well, which is really interesting that we have not, I don't think, had one disagreement on this. Which
we need
is,
to find one. Jane.
Yeah, we have to find one for sure. But you know what? One of the things about anxiety that is really interesting is exactly that, is that if you can learn to sit, like we hear a lot with emotions where people go, express your emotions, right?
Right.
And to me, I go, you can have emotional integrity. You can name the emotion. You can feel the emotion without needing to express it and feel like it controls you. And you do that by going within it and sitting with the experience. And so oftentimes exactly what you're doing is the idea of teaching people to be with the experience. I'll throw something out that we might disagree with, or at least we can have some dialogue about. So when I think of some of the core emotions, right? You know, let's say anger, frustration, resistance, anxiety, insecurity, depression, I tend to think of these as being bundled with stories in our childhood and our adolescence. And anxiety to me is an interesting one, because to me, I always go, sometimes there's a feeling and then we create the story, as you alluded to, but sometimes there's the story that then elicits the feeling. And part of the story that I think comes along with anxiety is the inability to choose or to own a choice once it's made. And especially if we feel out of control, means that we don't feel like we have choice. And it harkens back again to, of course, safety and security as a child, you know, childhood. Mm-hmm. But then how do we deal with safety and security issues? You'll see people's coping mechanisms be power plays and controlling. And then those mm-hmm. power plays and controlling to get us to feel safe and secure can get stuck in the body. And then what begins to happen is this anxiety comes, and what it feels like is I've got no control, which is another way of saying I've got no choice. And I think it was no agency. Yeah, and I think it, who was the African-American woman who refused to get off the bus? What was her name?
Rosa Parks.
Rosa Parks. She has a great saying. Yeah, yeah. She said, you know, the cure for fear is definitive action. Right. Yes. And so that partly is, I love that quote coming from, you know, sort of Rosa Parks, but I think that's what it is, right? The anxiety and the definitive action Heather is actually educating us on is one is to sit in it and also go, where is it that I'm feeling out of control in my life, perhaps? And what story am I telling about control? And where is it that I'm not choosing, you know, what I think needs to be chosen? Almost always, I've seen it again. I work with a lot of women too. And it's like relationship stuff, getting out of a marriage or, you know, like that can create a ton of anxiety. Jobs, you know, being stuck in a job, a ton of anxiety, not knowing how you're going to handle your kids, ton of anxiety. Totally. But it's all about agency and choice. I'm wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, I wouldn't argue anything there. I do, you know, when you talk about control, I definitely went working with people with anxiety. And I know, I mean, anxiety still comes up for me. I've learned ways, tools to manage that, different stories, you know, all that kind of thing. But when a person's in anxiety, that is precisely it. They, and then our actions, we will do anything for control in the moment, right? So absolutely, anxiety is about lack of control, lack of agency, lack of the ability to make a decision. And then what happens, though, is then we move into this space of behaving in ways of trying to get control any way we possibly can. So I'm thinking, you know, these are just things popping in my head, but it might be when I'm in heightened anxiety, that's when I get really, I'm even thinking about the example you gave of your mom, of where it's like, that's when I'm very much like, you know, pick up your, like all of a sudden I'm angry at my child of the teeniest little things because those shoes on the ground, I'm in such heightening, I can't handle that today, you know? And so we will have outbursts like that to try to gain a sense of control because the second we have control, the anxiety comes down for a moment. I mean, it's not lasting for a moment. So yeah, those things absolutely go together for sure.
And I think to begin to wrap this up, I think what, you know, for you all listeners, I think what Heather and I, and Heather, correct me here if you disagree with this, I think what we're essentially saying is that all this stuff that we're talking about, right, that these deep-seated stories, these emotions that recur again and again, even the obstacles in our lives, they are pointing to the patterns and the ways of thinking that are stuck in our unconscious through our struggles, through our trials, through our tribulations, through our traumas that then follow us around. And so if you're trying to make transformational change in wealth, in health, in personal relationships, it's virtually impossible just by budgeting more or running more on the treadmill or reading a communication book, right? It's not that those things don't matter. It's just that there's things deeper that you have never been educated on that people like Heather and I have seen. Now, Heather was, early to this. I was dragged kicking and screaming. But it's interesting that we came to this. Yeah, lucky me too that I finally kind of figured it out, you know? So Heather, I just think you're absolutely brilliant. I love the conversations with you. How about just final thoughts from you and then telling everyone where they can find you, because I'm sure they're going to want more of your education and more of your brain.
Well, thanks so much, Jade. I really appreciate that. Final thoughts. Well, there's a lot that could come from that conversation. Mm-hmm. I guess I would just say, I mean, you kind of succinctly just wrap that all up, but I would just reiterate the importance of understanding there is this deeper layer to hit at when we want to make change, when we want to make transformation, and that it is not so far out there. I mean, anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. Like I said, there are skills around this. There are practices. There are very clear-cut hows and strategies and really ways to do this that doesn't have to involve a, like I said, I think people get this idea you have to go sit on a couch and be psychoanalyzed for years and years. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I've done some of that. It's awesome stuff. But I'm just saying that's not necessarily what needs to happen in order to break free from some of your old stories and move into ones that are a lot more helpful in life.
Yeah, thank you so much. So where can people find you real quick on social?
You bet. Yeah, Instagram is probably the biggie. That is Heinen Counseling and Coaching. I don't know why I had to make that so difficult, but and Heinen is spelled H-E-Y-N-E-N. I have a couple of online courses more directed at ending binge eating and overeating and emotional eating. You can get to those from my website at heatherheinen.com. You can get to my podcast from there. My podcast is called Weight Loss and Wellness for Real. Weight loss, yes, is a part of it, but it's very much more these deeper things that you and I are talking about in order to get there. Yeah, I think that's it. And, yeah, I'm on YouTube. I just started YouTube. So Heather Heinen Wellness. I think that's it, Jade. I don't
know. Heather Heinen, thank you so much for being on. Hang on real quick. I'm going to end right now. But for all of you, we will see you at the next podcast.
You have been listening to the Next Level Human podcast with Dr. Jade Tita. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you subscribe and consider leaving a review. You make the biggest difference when you pass on your lessons and inspire others. That's why reviews like this are so powerful. Your words may be the only ones that resonate for someone else. Please remember the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only. Always consult your personal physician or therapist before making any lifestyle changes. And finally, thank you for who you are in the world and the difference you make.